the sister continued. O Ram, the sense of doership, the notion I do this, which gives rise to both happiness and unhappiness, or which gives rise to the state of yoga, is fictitious in the eyes of the wise. To the ignorant, however, it is real. So we're addressing here the notion of action. Sometimes this is the straightforward meaning of karma. It's what you believe that you do. But it's a bit of a bombshell here, isn't it? The sense of doership, which gives rise to both happiness and unhappiness, or which gives rise to the state of yoga, is fictitious in the eyes of the wise. Well, before I get on with the bombshell, let's just make sure the first part of this is clear. The sense of doership, which gives rise to both happiness and unhappiness. We believe that by doing things we can achieve certain ends, and these ends will give rise to a state of happiness, hopefully. And this is based on the idea that there are things out there which will give us some kind of fulfillment, some kind of ultimate fulfillment even. So this is what the action is about. It's about pursuing these goals based on the notion of a me here and a world out there, and in that world out there, the me here can find some kind of ultimate satisfaction. And some people reject that, and they think, no, there's more to life than that, there's more to being a human being than that. And they'll start pursuing spiritual things. They might start getting into meditation. And yoga means a whole field of spiritual practice in the East, although in the West it tends to be identified with just yoga, which takes some kind of physical form. But yoga is very much identified with higher states of consciousness and with techniques to achieve these higher states of consciousness. And very often such techniques are mentioned with great respect here in the Yoga Vasishta. But here, for the first time really, these states are being described as fictitious, the state of yoga. Yoga is even sometimes described as meaning union. It's possibly the same derivation as the word yoke. And it means union with God. So, you know, yoga's got this very exalted status as a means of achieving union with the divine. But here it is saying it's all fictitious in the eyes of the wise. And to the ignorant, however, it is real. And I've mentioned this before in the context of the Hindu doctrine of the three worlds, the Triloka, which posits three realms: celestial realm, physical realm, and the realm in between, which is sometimes referred to as the subtle realm. The physical realm is the realm which many of us relate to, and it's the one which we believe that we're acting within to achieve happiness, but often the end result being unhappiness. The subtle realm is the realm of the yogi, the realm of the mind and the imagination. And that's sometimes seen as being closer to the celestial realm, but it isn't. It's just as distant. There's no bridge between the yogic realm and the celestial realm, because the celestial realm is pure awareness. And getting caught up in the physical realm or in the mental realm, neither of them are going to get you there. So both these realms are ultimately fictitious from the perspective of pure awareness, which I'm suggesting here is analogous with the celestial realm. For what is the source of this notion? This notion arises when the mind, spurred by the predisposition, endeavours to gain something. The resultant action is then attributed to oneself. When the same action leads to the experience of its fruition, the notion, I enjoy this, arises. The two notions are in truth the two faces or phases of the same notion. It seems a bit Pavlovian, this. Pavlov was a psychologist who experimented on dogs. Whenever he fed the dog, a bell would ring, and the dog... Well, what happened was the dog learnt to salivate whenever it heard the bell, because it associated the bell with food. So even when food didn't arrive and the dog heard the bell, it would salivate. So there was a connection, there became a causal connection between the bell and the dog's salivation processes. And it's the same thing here. We get this notion that I do something, and then there's a result, and we get the notion, I enjoy this. And so these things get reinforced. Whether one is engaged in action or not, whether one is in heaven or in hell, whatever may be the psychological conditioning, that itself is experienced by the mind. So the mind's got its tendencies. These tendencies tend to get reinforced. We ignore all the times that they don't get reinforced. We tend to just focus on the times that they do get reinforced, because these are the times which fit in with our predisposition. Hence, to the ignorant and conditioned person, there is the notion, I do this, whether he is doing something or doing nothing. But such a notion does not arise in the enlightened or unconditioned, because the enlightened or unconditioned is not caught up in the notion of an I, an individual self, and is not caught up in the notion that there's a world out there which the I is somehow manipulating to its own ends. When the truth concerning this is known, the conditioning is weakened, and thenceforth the wise man, even while acting in this world, is not interested in the fruits of those actions. The wise man just gets on with it, gets on with what needs to be done. He lets actions happen in his life without attachment to those actions. In other words, he appears to be doing things, and whatever he be the results of those actions, he regards them as non-different from his own self. But such is not the attitude of one who is immersed in the mental states.